Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Amid the noise and ruckus of the Trump administration, the Twitter controversies, the Russia hearings, the cabinet scandals, the president says there is an untold success story, and he is right. President Trump has been pushing through Congress a new crop of young, mostly white, mostly male, conservative nominees to fill the federal bench of judges. That's what he wants to do. That is a generational change in the judiciary. Conservatives are pleased. Others say too many are not qualified, not impartial, not good for this country. This hour On Point, the Trump administration and its wave of judicial appointees. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you paying attention? And will this be President Trump's lasting legacy? How do you rule on his picks to fill the federal bench? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. There's been a lot going on, but the president behind the scenes has had his crew really focused on these federal appointments, these nominations that have been pushed through at a rapid clip. Here he was with Mitch McConnell last month talking about the success he sees having unfolded there. President Trump.
Nobody wants to talk about it. But when you think about it, Mitch and I were saying that has consequences 40 years out, depending on the age of the judge, but 40 years out. So numerous have been approved. Many, many are in the pipeline. The level of quality is extraordinary.
President Trump in October. Here was Texas Senator Ted Cruz yesterday during confirmation hearings for six more judges, two of them from his own state, praising President Trump's record on judicial nominations.
When the history books are written about the Trump administration, I believe perhaps the most long-lasting and significant legacy will be the men and women appointed and confirmed to the federal bench.
Well, a lot of men anyway. Some women, critics have been harsh. Vermont Democratic Senator Patrick Leahy wondered why the Republican-led committee had been pushing through the president's nominees in such haste.
I think this kind of rush to rubber stamp President Trump's nominees, many of whom have been extreme, some even objectively unqualified, has diminished the Senate's constitutional duty.
Extreme and objectively unqualified. So what's unfolding here? Joining me first today from Washington is Kogan Schnair. She covers federal courts and judicial nominations for the National Law Journal. You'll find a link to her latest reporting at our website, onpointradio.org. Kogan, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So what's unfolding here? You've got, on the one hand, the president delighting in this big push of nominees through the system. On the other hand, I'm reading a headline here from Dahlia Lithwick, says Trump is trying to stack the federal courts with wackadoos. What's going on?
Yes, well, lots of controversy over all of this. The president has a huge opportunity here to reshape the federal judiciary. There are about 890 federal judgeships. That's on the appellate and district courts. And there are about 145 total vacancies right now on those courts, as of the last time I checked. So, you know, big percentage, and he can nominate these people and get them on. There's been a lot of controversy over a couple nominees that the American Bar Association has rated not qualified, and also other nominees just based on things they said in blog posts, things they tweeted, their conservative views. So largely Democrats and some civil rights organizations have pushed back on some of these nominees, whereas Republicans and lots of conservative organizations are praising them.
What is unusual here, Kogan? I mean, after all, presidents come in and they nominate judges to the bench. That's just what happens. And sometimes it's a Republican, sometimes it's a Democrat. President Obama put up nominees. Now President Trump is doing that. So what's the big deal?
I think what's unusual and what we have here is that, well, first of all, the huge opportunity that the president has. I think he had over 100 at least when he took office, and that number has now jumped to 145. So he has, I think, a larger opportunity than other presidents have maybe had. But also, I think we are in perhaps a heightened partisan environment, not to mention the fact that the Trump administration, whereas the Obama administration asked for American Bar Association vetting prior to announcing nominees. So the ABA would do their process and decide how they were going to rate someone. And the Obama administration normally would not appoint a nominee that had been rated unqualified. So we don't know really how many of those nominees weren't qualified. But the Trump administration has abandoned the ABA's has abandoned its push to work with the ABA. So what happens is the Trump administration announces nominees, and then the ABA does its vetting and makes those final ratings public. So we have more of a sense of what they're thinking.
And we end up seeing nominees who the American Bar Association is rating as unqualified. We'll look at that. Why were there so many vacancies at the beginning of the Trump administration? What dynamics led to that?
Well, there was a big fight over judicial nominations in the Obama administration. Republicans largely blocked Obama's nominees. There was this whole big fight, I think it was in 2013, where Democrats decided to do away with the filibuster so that they could approve judicial nominees with simple majority. So they did that to get around sort of Republicans blocking these nominees, and they were able to push through some folks. And really the practical application is that Obama was able to nominate some judges that did reshape some federal courts. The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond, Virginia, comes to mind. That was a largely conservative court. Mm-hmm. And Obama's nominees really flipped that court. It's now a pretty liberal court. And same sort of on the D.C. Circuit here in Washington. So I think there's also that fear on Democrats' side that Republicans have that opportunity now.
I mean, the Democrats did away with that rule, and then they lost control of the Senate.
Yes.
So and then Republicans sort of always just stopped pushing through Obama nominees, which created this big pool, a reservoir, right?
Exactly. So we created a bunch of vacancies, and it sort of now has set the scene for President Trump to come in and fill all these spots.
The ABA comes in normally before the nomination is formalized with a recommendation. The Trump administration is blowing right past that and doing it without their nomination. Some of those then have run into trouble with the ABA, who have called them unqualified. Can you give us a couple of examples of nominees who have raised the most red flags?
Yes. So the more recent ones that come to mind are Brett Tolley, who's a nominee for a district court. Tolley is only 36 years old, and the ABA rated him unqualified. He's never tried a case, and the lower courts are trial courts. So while he's worked on legal cases, he's helped prepare briefs and things like that, he's never actually been in court trying a case. And the ABA decided that he didn't have enough experience. So that was one. Another
was it just about experience? I mean, I'm reading here. This is something that he wrote in the aftermath of the Newtown, Connecticut shootings, where 20 school children died, of course. On his blog, he wrote, he pledged his total support to the National Rifle Association, quoting him here, financially, politically, and intellectually. Has that historically been a disqualifying kind of statement, or that's just within the sway?
I'm not sure it's that statement by itself. I think it's a collective group of statements that Mr. Tolley has made on the internet. And I think that's another thing that is really playing into this lately, is that when we're nominating sort of these younger nominees and folks that are sort of come to age in the past 20 years, you have more of an online paper trail. They have blog posts. They post on message boards. They tweet. You have a lot more to work with in terms of things they might have written maybe 10 or 15 years ago.
Stephen Grass, nominee for the appeals court in St. Louis. What's the situation there? The ABA not so happy.
Yes. So with Mr. Grass, the issue, the ABA, this was interesting because Mr. Grass is a nominee for an appellate court, which is the second ring of courts below the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And 80%
very
of cases
high.
End at these cases, mm-hmm. at these courts. Yes. Very important role. And the ABA rated him not qualified unanimously with one abstention. So there's 15 people on the standing committee that does these ratings. So all of those people voted besides one.
And this is quite rare for a unanimous, non-qualified,
yes,
unqualified.
This is rare, especially for an appellate. Mm-hmm. And so the ABA actually put out, when they rated him unqualified, this was, I believe, November 1st, the ABA actually put out a report explaining themselves, which they don't typically do. Usually they just write a letter to the committee and say, hey, this person's unqualified, you know, sort of generalized. But in Mr. Grass's case, they put out a whole 8-page statement about the review process. And the main reasons they pointed to for giving him an unqualified rating were that they believed that he had very closely held conservative beliefs, which on one hand, that isn't always an issue, but the ABA thought that Mr. Grass would be unable to separate himself from those beliefs while sitting on the federal bench, and that that would be a problem. And when they do these evaluations, they speak to a lot of lawyers who have worked with the judge or the to-be judge, lawyers who've worked with them, lawyers who know them, lawyers in their geographic area, and they keep the process entirely confidential, but they won't consider comments from folks who are anonymous. So they have to know that this is a real person that they're talking to. And the ABA said that some of these folks that they talked to not only said that he was likely unable to separate himself from his beliefs, but also that they were nervous to talk to the ABA at all and that they feared he would there would be some sort of retaliation if they talked to the ABA. And there was also a few people that the ABA said that Mr. Grass was rude and sometimes uncivil to opposing lawyers in court. So that played into it, too. The ABA, when they do these, thinks about three main things, which are integrity, temperament, and experience. So
Ted Cruz, of course, saying yesterday the ABA has become ideological itself with an agenda of its own. How are they responding?
So the ABA pushes back on that largely because the standing committee that does the judicial nominations is very separate from the actual ABA itself. And the ABA does come out with political positions. They have come out against the president's travel bans, for example, and various policies. They issue press releases. They sue. they do all sorts of things. So they do have political positions. But the standing committee that does these judicial nominees are largely separate. And they have rules about if you're serving on the committee and doing this vetting, you cannot give to federal elections. You cannot participate in them. It's a 3-year staggered term. And they largely do an evaluation of the peers. They say, you know, these ratings are not our results. It's ratings by these peers.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Trump administration pushing record numbers of judges into the federal courts and how these appointees may change American justice. You can join us this hour. Is this the real impact of this administration so far? How do you see it? Is the administration justified in brushing by the recommendations or warnings of the American Bar Association? Are you judging in part just by what we can see? Overwhelmingly white male judges coming in. Does that feel strange after the diversity of the Obama-era nominees? Is that what, just the meaning of President Trump's election being played out here? To the victor go the spoils. Kogan Schnair is with us, covers the federal courts and judicial nominations at the National Law Review. There have been some tough back and forths here. Last month, the ABA unanimously rated Leonard Stephen Grass not qualified. This is very unusual to fill a vacancy on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 8th Circuit in St. Louis. Here he was during his confirmation hearing at the beginning of this month, being grilled by Democratic Senator Sheldon Whitehouse.
Mr. Grass, I assume you're keenly aware that you are the first Circuit Court nominee since 2006 to receive a unanimous not qualified rating from the ABA, and that the last nominee who had such a rating was withdrawn.
That is my understanding, Senator.
Do you think that this is a matter as to which the committee should have no concern?
Senator, I have great respect for the amount of time and effort that the American Bar Association put into the process. I do respectfully disagree with the result.
Okay, so yes, not qualified, but let's move on. Let's go through. Ted Cruz of Texas saying the ABA has become itself politicized. Here he was during yesterday's Senate Judiciary Committee hearing.
I think the notion of a non-ideological organization has been belied by the conduct of the ABA over years. The ABA today is an openly liberal advocacy group.
The ABA says, no, that's not what we do, but there it is, and that's where we are in November 2017.
Hogenschneider, please stand by in Washington. Christine Lucius joins us right now from Washington as well. Executive VP for Policy at the Leadership Conference. It's a coalition of civil rights interest groups. Follows judicial and executive nominations very closely. Christine Lucius, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And with us from Washington, Jonathan Adler, professor of law, director of the Center for Business Law and Regulation at Case Western Reserve University School of Law, member of the Federalist Society, which has been helpful to the Trump administration, certainly during the candidacy of Donald Trump, in putting together lists of judicial nominees. He doesn't speak for them here today, but we're glad he's with us. Jonathan Adler, thank you very much for joining us.
It's good to be here.
Christine Lucius, first to you. What do you see unfolding in the nominees and appointments that are being made?
Well, first, Tom, I would say that I think the way you frame this at the beginning of your show is exactly right. I think this is an issue that not enough people are paying attention to, despite the fact that every day federal courts make decisions that impact many aspects of the lives of all who live in the United States, and courts safeguard our most fundamental rights and freedoms from attack. The problem is that President Trump is in a rush to reshape the federal bench in his own image.
Why not? He's president.
Because it is an independent branch of government. And under the Constitution, it's not just the president who gets to decide who sits on that independent branch of government. It is also the Senate. And so the question is, you asked the question about, will this be his lasting legacy? And my response to that is that depends on whether the Senate will simply be a rubber stamp and discard all the standards that it's previously applied to those who've been nominated to the federal bench.
What do you see so far in the profile of nominees, appointees?
What I see so far are some very extreme individuals. I'm troubled by the ABA ratings of four of them being not qualified. I'm troubled by their inexperience, and I'm troubled by their record of extreme partisanship. I'm also troubled that we've seen at least two of them recently that investigative reporting has revealed things that were not disclosed to the Senate Judiciary Committee. I worked for a long time on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and my experience is senators on both sides of the aisle take that process very seriously. When things come up that were not disclosed to the committee, not put on the Senate judicial questionnaire that they're all required to fill out, it is a real problem because it's in that committee that the nominees are asked questions and their records are thoroughly reviewed by all the members who serve on that committee. The fact that now revelations are coming to light about Brett Talley not disclosing controversial blog postings and conflicts of interest involving his wife's employer, and also about Thomas Farr, a district court nominee in North Carolina who's not been mentioned yet, there are now revelations that his testimony may not have been inaccurate before the committee.
Jonathan Adler, how do you see it? Presidents come in, they nominate, and of course there's frequently close attention paid before those nominations go through or do not go through. Is there something different this time, Jonathan?
Well, I think President Trump, during the campaign, said he was going to nominate conservative jurists in the mold of the late Justice Antonin Scalia, and whether or not President Trump has been able to fulfill his other campaign promises, this is something he has followed through with. He has nominated just the sort of folks you would expect a Republican president to nominate. In fact, in many respects, he's exceeded those expectations, nominating, for example, a large number of highly respected legal academics to federal appellate courts, doing so at greater numbers than we've seen in prior administrations. And I think what we're seeing in terms of the overall process, we're seeing the same sorts of partisan attacks that have unfortunately characterized the judicial nomination process for many years, that attacks are made against some of his nominees that are very similar to attacks that Republicans used to make against Obama's nominees. And I think in both cases, what's going on is partisanship, people not wanting presidents to be able to nominate the sort of judges the presidents want to nominate. But that's what we expect in our system. President Obama filled close to 40% of the federal bench during his two terms. Mm-hmm. And if Donald Trump serves two terms, we should expect that he would do something similar.
I mean, we've got headlines here and, you know, make of it what you have. Dolly Lithwick saying Trump's trying to stack the federal courts with wackadoos. You're saying with highly respected legal academics. How do you account for that difference in characterization. Is that just politics, or are there some that, look marginal to you and others you'd put in that highly respected category, Jonathan?
Well, certainly of the appellate nominees, the sort of folks that have been accused of being wackadoos are people that are quite in the mainstream of the Republican Party, quite in the mainstream of conservative jurisprudence. Basically, anyone who shares the judicial philosophy and outlook of the late Antonin Scalia is characterized as an extremist. And that is as unreasonable as it would be for a conservative to label a Democratic nominee who follows the jurisprudence of Ruth Bader Ginsburg to be an extremist. The reality is that in our politics, we have conservative judicial philosophies, we have liberal judicial philosophies, and we don't help the process by claiming that everyone who's on the other side of the fence is somehow extreme. But if you look at the sorts of positions and the sorts of comments that are characterized as being extreme, things that are in the case books written by liberal academics are characterized, such as asking students to consider the extent to which Roe v. Wade should or should not be seen as similar to Dred Scott, is characterized as an extreme position. That's something that we've seen in Supreme Court opinions. When we have a country as closely divided as this country is, it's understandable we see these sorts of attacks, but I don't think they're a fair representation of the individual's views and where they fall on the political spectrum.
As a conservative, where would you expect or hope to see over time, given the profile that's emerging then of the federal bench under President Trump, where would you expect to see the greatest impact in terms of particular rulings, judgments, how Americans understand the meaning of the law as interpreted by the courts?
Well, I mean,
you mentioned abortion. Where else?
Sure. I mean, I think in some respects it's hard to tell because judges typically serve for decades. And the issues that are front and center today in our legal disputes are probably not going to be the issues that are front and center 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now.
I don't know. We've had some pretty long-lasting issues around affirmative action, around abortion. I mean, some of these things seem to be very long-lived in their attention required by the courts.
Some of them certainly are, but new issues emerge. So, for example, when President Clinton was making judicial nominees, no one thought that his nominees would have to pass on questions related to the balance between civil liberties and national security that were prompted by 9/11. Mm-hmm. When Franklin Roosevelt was nominating judges with an eye toward supporting the New Deal, he had no idea that the civil rights movement and concerns about the treatment of criminal defendants would dominate the judicial dockets in the 1950s and 60s. So what I'm saying is that our process over time, we get judges that reflect the judicial philosophies desired by the presidents that nominate them. That's the way our system is supposed to work. It's the way it does work. Even if presidents think they're nominating people with a focus on a particular issue, the sorts of legal questions that actually end up being the focus of court's attention are often something else, and that's why it's a good thing, in my view at least, that presidents focus on broader judicial philosophy, and that means a liberal president nominates judges that have a more liberal judicial philosophy, and conservative ones nominate those with a more conservative judicial philosophy.
Christine Lucius, you've got critics saying, good heavens, they're taking down all the standards, they're putting people in there who aren't qualified, the ABA says they're not qualified, characterizing some of these as wackadoo. Jonathan Adler says, look, this is the regular ebb and flow of jurisprudence in this country, given depending on who's in power politically. What about that view, Christine?
Well, I disagree with the professor in the sense that these are not candidates for political office. What we're seeing in a lot of these nominees by President Trump is not even meeting or even attempting to understand the importance of impartiality and being fair-minded. These aren't candidates for political office or to be the next nominee from Alabama. These are people who need to have a level of respect and to ensure public confidence that when you appear in front of them, you will get a fair shot. It is hard, and they have a great deal of power. All federal judges have a great deal of power. They make life and death decisions every day. So the notion that a 30-something who's not even done a trial, let alone argued a motion in front of a judge.
And we've seen that in this case.
Right. That's what we see with Mr. Talley. Could, a month from now be deciding a protection order from a domestic violence victim where the issue might involve a gun issue and her safety is really troubling in light of the very blog post, Tom, that you quoted earlier in your show. This nominee has
pledged. Or he said he was financially, politically, and intellectually pledged to total support to the NRA.
Exactly. So how would that woman feel that she was going to get a fair shot in front of this judge and feel that he was going to apply the legal standard that should be applied? I think that what we really need to understand, and your listeners need to understand, is the difference between political office holders versus impartial judges. Federal judges affect so much of our freedoms, and they really have to have a different standard. My concern is the Senate is losing all of its traditional standards about minimal competence. That's what the ABA evaluation really represents, a minimal professional competence. It's necessary but not sufficient. It's usually the first step in the process. And when they find four of this president's nominees to be not qualified, that is a huge red flag. Mr. Gross, who you mentioned, who they found not qualified, it wasn't just not qualified because he hadn't brought a sufficient number of cases in court. They found he was not qualified for bias. They found that he did not appreciate the role of being a judge. That is incredibly rare for the ABA to do that. The ABA has given well-qualified and qualified ratings to the vast majority of President Trump's judicial nominees, but these four in particular should really give every senator pause about what level, what standards we're going to have for this independent branch of government, given that these are lifetime appointments and people with great power.
Kogan-Schnair, is there any sign that the Senate is going to take those unanimous, not qualified findings and say no to any or some of these nominees?
That remains to be seen, I think, Tom. Definitely there are Democrats pushing back on these nominees. But in the end, Republicans have the majority and they can push these nominees through when they want to. And I think sort of to both the points, if we look at the votes for President Trump's appellate nominees, they've largely been party line votes. I mean, a lot of these are, you know, in the 40s or 30s to 70 or, you know, kind of split. Whereas the nominees for Obama's appellate judges and George W. Bush's appellate judges, those were largely, you know, 93-2 and things like that. Very, very lopsided votes. So I think that there is definitely, we're seeing an increase in partisanship and a pushback, especially on the part of the minority party, the Democrats.
It's hard to know what to make of that these days. What about the demographic profile of those? I mean, I don't know what the latest numbers are, but I'm looking at a November 11th report just from last week saying of 18 appellate nominees, and these are very powerful, of course, 14 are men out of 18, 16 are white. President Obama had a reputation for appointing a quite diverse slate of judges to the bench. What are people making of the demographic, just how this lineup looks?
Yes, this is something that I think is of a lot of concern to Democrats and to civil rights groups. As you said, Trump's judges, the nominees so far, 91% white, 81% male. Three in every four nominees are a white man. And that, you know, comes right after the Obama administration, which did nominate the most diverse group of judges. And if we look even in past years, Trump is following a pattern, but he has more white male nominees. So 60 and to be fair, Trump just got started. So he has a lot more to go and could, you know, somehow increase the diversity very quickly. But President Bush, 67% of his nominees were white men, Clinton 38%, Reagan 93%. So definitely Trump is up there with Reagan at this point.
Of course, it's many years later now. Jonathan Adler, does it give you pause that we have, or is it inconsequential to you that we have 91% white nominees from the Trump administration so far?
I would certainly prefer a more diverse array of nominees, but I also think it's important to note that, for example, one of Trump's nominees to the Fifth Circuit yesterday. James Ho will be the first Asian American confirmed to the Fifth Circuit. Amul Thapar, who was Trump's first appellate nominee, I believe was the first individual of South Asian descent, certainly on the Sixth Circuit, and had previously been, I believe, the first person of South Asian descent on the federal judiciary. So not as diverse as I would like, but I think it's important to note that there is more to the story.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Trump administration pushing record numbers of conservative judges into the federal courts and how that may change American justice. Jonathan Adler is with us, professor of law, director of the Center for Business Law and Regulation at the Case Western Reserve University School of Law, member of the Federalist Society, though does not speak for them today. They've been involved in proposing nominees to candidate Trump and watching closely those lists on into the formal nomination process. Christine Lucius is with us, Executive VP for Policy at the Leadership Conference. It's a coalition of civil rights interest groups. Kogan Schneer is covering all this for the National Law Journal and joins us from Washington. You can join us as well. What do you see here? The normal ebb and flow of flavors on the bench or something different under President Trump. Here was then White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer. This was back in May, announcing the nomination then of 10 new judges and quoting his boss, extolling their qualifications to sit on the federal bench.
These, quote, highly respected people are the kind of scholars that we need to preserve the very core of our country and make it greater than ever before, end quote.
Make America great again. On the other hand, here was Senator Dianne Feinstein. She had Brett Tully, the president's nominee to a lifetime federal judgeship in Alabama. He got a unanimous, not qualified ruling by the American Bar Association, since been confirmed by the Senate Judiciary Committee. During that confirmation hearing last week, Senator Feinstein pointed to Tully's blog supporting the NRA days after the Newtown's Sandy Hook shooting.
In light of what he had written about the NRA, how would litigants not question his impartiality in cases where the NRA was involved? He declined to answer. I find this unacceptable. I hope the committee would find it unacceptable.
That's still to go before the full Senate. Lots of callers for all three of you. Mike in Laurinburg, North Carolina. Mike, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Okay.
I wanted to ask a very important question as well as a comment. I'll make the comment first. Mm-hmm. Comment is, I live in North Carolina. President Obama had an appointee for a federal judgeship here. Our state went the longest without that judgeship being filled. And I was curious about basically the fact that the Republicans did everything to uphold, to withstand President Obama's fulfillment of that particular position,
mm-hmm.
not because
to block
the person
it.
Was mm-hmm. not qualified. The person was qualified, but she was a female, but she was also a black female.
Mm-hmm.
My thing with the judgeships that Donald Trump is doing now is to pack the courts. It is not with people that reflect the jurisprudence of the American judicial system as opposed to their political viewpoint, which is going to be bent on white and conservative, not so much that it is an open American viewpoint as far as interpreting,
mm-hmm.
I guess what Scalia would say, the law.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to interpretate what the law said, and he's saying that the late Scalia was saying that a lot of people were reinventing the law on mm-hmm. the court system. But my thing is, in a state like North Carolina, where we just went through this election, we have a state house that is filled with Republicans, did not want to redraw our redistricting, and the Justice Department mm-hmm. in Washington had enforced them to redraw the district lines. They were trying everything they could not to, or to wait as long as they had to do it. Now that it's being withdrawn, and you got these judgeships that are conveying the Republican as well as the conservative white.
Yeah, Mike, we've got it. If I may, and I appreciate your call, let me take it to Jonathan Adler. You know, Jonathan, look, here's Mike, a citizen, not a legal scholar, but clearly paying close attention, and you hear the distinction he's worried about there. You know, is this, Are we putting a federal bench together under President Trump, which will represent, I'm not sure how to describe it, but sort of the open American law that Mike wants to see, or a white conservative viewpoint? Do you relate to what he's concerned about there, and what do you say to him?
Well, I mean, I think that it reflects a misunderstanding of the sorts of people that the president is nominating. They're not there to represent the view of any particular race or any particular party, believe that you should apply the law as it's written, that the point of the federal judiciary is to fairly adjudicate disputes under the law as it stands when those cases are brought, and that it's for the legislature to enact a policy that judges faithfully apply.
In Why 91% white then? 91% in 2017?
We know in a wide range of institutions, there is often a tendency, especially when one prioritizes certain types of experience, to replicate the racial and gender makeup of what came before. And I certainly think that that's a reasonable concern.
But these are not necessarily experienced. These are very young overall. It's a young crew.
Some of them are young, but yes. but you know, pointing people in their 40s and 50s, which most of them are, to various judicial nominations is hardly out of the mainstream. People that are being labeled as unqualified by the ABA in many cases have greater qualifications than people that the ABA rated qualified under the Obama administration. And there's clearly a double standard at work there. And on the issue of vacancies, it is certainly true that senators have often abused their privilege to block qualified individuals from being confirmed. In the case of the North Carolina seat, which that was open going all the way back to President Bush's term.
Yeah,
that seat opened in 2005. Mm-hmm. President Bush made a nomination to that seat. Senate Democrats refused to confirm that individual. In retaliation, Senator Burr used his blue slip prerogative to prevent President Obama from filling that seat. I happen to think that the use of the blue slip in that way is an abuse. I happen to think when either party has failed to confirm qualified individuals at a deliberate pace, it's been a problem. But it's not accurate to suggest that this is something new. The percentage of the federal judiciary that was vacant when Donald Trump took office was less as a percentage of the judiciary than when President Clinton took office because of the delays of the first President Bush's nominees. Unfortunately, there's been a lot of bad behavior for a long time in this process, and a lot of the attacks and charges that are made are really, you know, a form of partisanship, and I don't think are fairly characterizing the qualifications of the individuals involved.
Christine, what do you say to this perspective from our caller in North Carolina that what's being imposed or reimposed here is a white conservative? Do you see it as white conservative, or Jonathan says it's just fair?
I think Mike raises a really important point in North Carolina. In that case, in the Eastern District of North Carolina, the nominee's name was Patricia Timmons Goodson, and she was a former state Supreme Court justice, and she was nominated by Obama to fill the vacancy that's been pending longer than any other vacancy. And she was blocked by Senator Burr. And now, who Trump has replaced that nomination with is a man by the name of Thomas Farr. And who is Thomas Farr? He is a white man who for years has defended the GOP in its attempts to suppress voting laws, to suppress voting in North Carolina. He's also advocated for a North Carolina law that would eliminate employment discrimination, ability to sue for employment discrimination. They have replaced this woman with Mr. Farr, who, you know, has a very troubling record in terms of civil rights. But there are actually 10 cases where the Senate refused to bring an Obama judicial nominee of color for a vote, and Trump has nominated someone in their place. In all 10 cases, Trump replaced that person of color who had been nominated to that seat with a white nominee. I think that is it. Those numbers are hard to ignore, and I think that it's really changing the trend to a more diverse federal bench. And let's just remember that a more diverse federal bench will increase public confidence in courts. I think people like your caller are right to raise the concern of what President Trump is doing with these nominations.
It's a pretty notable number you cite there. Kogenschner, what about the senators' ability to put a hold on nominees, the so-called blue slip? Is that still functioning here? Can Democratic senators just put a hold on these, as of course has been done in the past by members of both parties?
Yes, they can. And the blue slip process, to be clear, has changed over the years. Some leaders of the Senate Judiciary Committee do it one way, some do it another way. The way that it's been working under Senator Chuck Grassley, who's the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, a Republican, is that the home state senators of these nominees return what's called blue slips because of the color of the paper they write them on, to essentially sign off on a nominee and say, okay, I'm all right with this nominee. And only after both home state senators have returned blue slips does the nominee get a hearing before the committee. So if senators withhold blue slips, as some have done, that means that the nominee doesn't get a hearing in the committee and thus doesn't get voted on by the committee and doesn't get voted on by the full Senate. So that has already happened. Senator Al Franken of Minnesota has withheld a blue slip for a nominee for the Eighth Circuit, and he's cited that that nominee is too conservative. He thinks he's too much like Justice Scalia. Whereas the other home state senator from Minnesota, Senator Amy Klobuchar, reportedly signed off on the nominee. So there is sort of a push to not sign off on nominees or sign off on them. And I think there are also cases where you would see Republicans, even in this administration, not return a blue slip. I believe that Senator Kennedy of Louisiana, who's a Republican, hasn't returned a blue slip for one of the Fifth Circuit nominees. He might still do that. He hasn't done it yet, as last time I checked. But certainly in the Obama administration, Republicans refuse to return blue slips all the time.
Amanda in Charleston, South Carolina. Amanda, you're on. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Tom, I just want to say this is the most serious thing going on in our country right now. And this will be on the heads of the GOP, the Republicans in the Senate, if they are to approve some of these people that are unequivocally, absolutely not qualified for this most important job. This is a sleeper. People are not paying attention. And we all know, I'm speaking for people, that President Trump is unfit to pick these people. We know this with what he's done in this country throughout every single entity thing he's done. And this will be on the heads of the GOP, the Republican Party. They need to understand this is life-changing for America. This is absolutely just, it's mind-boggling.
But Amanda, these may be the changes that the party wants. They have free will to put up who they like here, and this is who they're putting up. They won the presidency.
You're right, Tom. It's what they want, and this should show Americans, whether you're Republican, whether you're independent, whether you're Democrat, that the GOP, the Republican Party that keeps approving and voting and doing these things, it shows what kind of ethics, morals, what kind of values.
Amanda, we've got it. Jonathan Adler, what do you say to our very unhappy caller there from South Carolina?
Well, we know that judicial nominations and the Supreme Court in particular was a major issue for many voters in the 2016 election, and the majority of voters that made that their top issue voted Republican. A lot of people believe, I think correctly, that the sort of nominees that Republican presidents tend to appoint are the sorts of judicial nominees we should have. And I think that, the claims that some of these folks are unqualified coming from the ABA, I think, is hard to credit, given that you had nominees with similar or lesser qualifications nominated by President Obama who weren't rated not qualified. Just to use the example of Brett Talley has more trial court experience, more oral argument experience than a woman named Allison Nathan, who was nominated by President Obama. She was confirmed. I have not heard no comments or criticisms of her performance on the bench to suggest that she has somehow failed to perform adequately as a federal judge in what is probably the most complicated and complex federal district court in terms of its docket in the country. And yet Brett Talley, who, unlike her, spent 2 years clerking on a trial court, unlike her, has argued multiple cases in both state and federal court when he worked as Deputy Solicitor General for the state of Alabama, is rated not qualified purely for lacking experience when he had more than she did. And so when you look at that, it's hard to take that ranking seriously. And I would just also note, the ABA committee does include people that, for example, signed letters opposing the confirmation of Justice Alito, who no one seriously argued was not qualified for that position, and have given money to organizations that are very active in these sorts of fights. So I just don't view I think it's certainly reasonable to say that a district court nominee should have certain types of trial experience, and maybe both of these nominees should have had more. I don't think it's fair or serious to say that the ABA has consistently applied its own standards and has acted as a truly impartial or nonpartisan entity. I mean, and there have actually been three academic studies suggesting that there is partisan bias.
It's sad that this review that's gone back to the Eisenhower administration is seen in this light now. I mean, we need wise, experienced people from the field looking over this. Senators have a lot on their plate. Christine, if this we're less than a year in, and there's been a tremendous rate of nominations here, and many going through. If we continue on this path, how do you think it'll change the country over the lifetime of these appointees?
I think that it will change the country dramatically. I mean, I do think that this is a larger problem, that many of President Trump's judicial nominees are unqualified and outside the mainstream or both, and that they threaten to enable and embolden the Trump administration's assault on civil and human rights. The reality is that President Trump has not been able to garner bipartisan support for legislation. There's no legislative agenda that he has put forward that has gotten bipartisan buy-in to, and he is losing in court. Many of his executive actions right out of the gate were stopped by courts. So rather than moderate and try and come up with new ideas that would attract people from both sides of the aisle to support, he instead is trying to change the courts. And I think you've framed this discussion today as what it should be. It is a sleeper issue that not enough people are paying attention to. And we really need to safeguard the independence of our federal judiciary. And only if the Senate stands up and acts as a real check on this president's power will there be a solution.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people are paying attention. The president, the now president, said during his campaign this is very much what he wanted to do. And many voters may have gone with him exactly for that, Supreme Court and beyond. Do you see anything that will slow this down, Kogan? Anything on the horizon? Or is this the way the federal bench is going now under Trump?
I think it's a wait and see for now, Tom. I think that we will certainly see some more confirmation battles in the next few months.
Kogan Schnair with the National Law Journal. Thank you very much for being with us today. Christine Lucius with the Leadership Conference and Jonathan Adler from the Case Western Reserve University School of Law. Our thanks to all three of you and to all of our listeners. Thanks for joining us this hour. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.